Welcome, Truth Seekers. It is I, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, once again sitting in for Mike Malloy as he is on vacation for the rest of the week. Never fear, he will return Monday. So don't worry. You'll only have to put up with me for two more days, but I will make it worth your while. Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com, the citizen investigative journalist. Yes, you may have heard of me. Of course, I've been on Malloy's show many times. Have been guest hosting here all week from Los Angeles, K-Talk AM 1150, where we're, of course, dealing with the breaking news this evening. Boy, I'll tell you, tough day for those of us who grew up in the 70s. First, we had Farrah Fawcett, who died this morning of cancer at the age of 62. And I suspect just about every guy I know, just about every guy in the country my age had that famous poster of hers up in their bedroom. Tony, did you have that poster? You're too young, aren't you? Yeah, I had the poster. She died this morning from cancer at the age of 62. And, of course, late this afternoon, just before airtime, stunning news, Michael Jackson dead at the age of 50. He was found this morning in his mansion, passed out. The cause of death right now is being described as a cardiac event. Don't know if it was a cardiac arrest. Exactly what it was. Information is still sketchy on that, on the exact cause of death. There was a press conference held not long ago out in Bel Air, where he was found originally. But we don't know too much yet about the cause of that death. We will, of course, keep our eyes on that, and where and if there is any news above and beyond the fact that the King of Pop was stunningly found dead today. Where there is news, of course, we will bring it to you. But we don't need to spend the next 3 hours talking about that. I suspect all the other media in the world will be doing that. You don't need me for that. You don't need the independent, alternative, progressive media for that. You need us to tell you the stories that won't be covered everywhere else, and we will be doing that tonight. Coming up in this hour, I'm going to be joined by Colleen Rowley, former FBI special agent, 9/11 whistleblower, Time Magazine's 2002 Person of the Year. She was the one who tried to warn the FBI about 9/11, about Zacharias Moussaoui and his plans, her concerns about the flight lessons he was taking. No one wanted to listen. Well, she also tried to let folks know about her concerns about the war in Iraq. And at that point, very few people wanted to listen. Particularly 60 Minutes, CBS 60 Minutes. She told her story. She told her concerns to them. They never aired it. She wrote about that today at BradBlog.com. You can check out her article on that, her story. But she'll tell you about it firsthand, first person. And if you'd like to have a question for Colleen Rowley, you can give us a call all night tonight, 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150. Don't use Mike Malloy's regular 800 numbers because no one's going to answer. You have to call us here, 877-520-1150. Colleen is going to be with us here in the first hour, and so we will take your calls if you have questions for her, the great 9/11 whistleblower. She will be here also tonight. Mark Carlin from BuzzFlash.com will be joining us. Talk about progressive media in the age of Obama. Andrew Krieg is also going to talk, is going to be with us. Got a lot of folks tonight. Andrew Krieg is going to talk about a forum that's going to be held tomorrow in D.C. at the National Press Club. I'm told at this late hour it's going to be covered by C-SPAN, which is good news, at least for the folks who live on the East Coast, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. East Coast tomorrow. A forum with a bunch of folks, a bunch of groups, including John Conyers, by the way, is going to be there, calling on the Justice Department to bring an investigation on the political prosecutions that have been going on for the last 8 years out of the Department of Justice, the prosecutions against guys like Don Siegelman, Paul Miner, and too many others. Democrats were actually prosecuted at a rate of 7-1. During the Bush administration. I'm sure that's just because the Democrats were that bad that they had to be investigated, right? Yeah, I don't think so. So we're going to talk with Andrew Krieg about that. What else we have on the docket? Oh, yeah. Desi Doyen is going to be joining us. My lovely producer and co-host and the managing editor of the Green News Report, which is heard on a radio station near you that she and I do a couple times a week. And if it's not heard near you, what the hell is wrong with your radio station? We're going to we're going to have the Green News Report later, and we're going to she's going to stick around for a live version of the Green News Report. We're also going to be joined at that time by Bob Kincaid from out in West Virginia, a radio host of Head On Radio, along with Lorella Scarborough, an activist out of West Virginia, where they have been holding increasingly heated protests against mountaintop removal by the big coal companies out there in West Virginia. Ain't nobody covering that one, frankly, and it's getting ugly out there. So we're going to talk about all of that and so much more here in this in these next 3 hours. I do hope you can stick with us throughout. A couple of news items I do want to hit real quickly before we bring on Colleen Rowley after the break here. Speaking of investigations, Acorn. You all may have heard of Acorn if you watch Fox News. They're the folks who have been going around, you know, Fox has been talking about them around the clock. They still are claiming they're committing voter fraud and all of this nonsense. Never mind, there's no evidence of that. Never mind that just last week, the head of the GOP's voter registration firm, a fellow by the name of Mark Anthony Jacoby of Young Political Majors, pled guilty to voter registration fraud. Yes, he himself, the head of the firm, hired by the California GOP out here and in at least three other states, pled guilty to voter registration fraud, and they are alleged to have changed the voter registrations from Democratic to Republican, which meant that thousands of voters went to the polls during the primaries last year and couldn't vote. Couldn't vote in the Democratic primary because their name had been changed to Republican, their registration. That's what this guy did. Now, the Acorn folks, by the way, have never, not only have not pled guilty, they have not been charged with this, with any sort of voter registration fraud or voter fraud, which is what you keep hearing. They were never charged because they didn't do it. Who did do some voter registration with Acorn? Well, a handful of their 13,000 employees did do it. And then they were charged, and they were charged because Acorn turned them in. And if it wasn't for the fact that they turned them in, I don't know, they might have gotten away with it. But Acorn themselves were the ones who were defrauded here. This would be akin, when you hear folks out there telling you that Acorn is committing voter fraud, or even Acorn is committing voter registration fraud, this is like saying Walmart is committing theft when some of their employees steal something off the shelves. Yes, Walmart is a thief because of their employees that they turned in. It's absurd. Well, here we have today breaking news thanks to VotersUnite.org and my friend Ellen Tyson over there, who puts out the daily voting news every day. She brought my attention to this just before airtime tonight. Acorn has settled a voter registration lawsuit with the state of Missouri. They settled. That's good. Here's what you might want to notice right below the headline. The state of Missouri agreed Thursday to pay $450,000 to Acorn to help settle a voter registration lawsuit that Acorn filed last year. As it turns out, Missouri was not following the motor voter law. They weren't properly registering voters. They were supposed to register voters, low-income and disabled people, when they go to visit social services offices under the motor voter law. The state of Missouri was not doing that, so Acorn filed its suit in April of 2008, alleging that the state wasn't meeting their obligations under the law. 3 months later, a federal judge ordered the state to begin taking concrete steps to help its clients register to vote. And since then, the state has taken extraordinary steps to comply with the federal law, said John Greenbaum, legal director at the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights under law, which represented Acorn. The lawsuit has led to a 2,000% increase in the number of people registering to vote at Missouri public assistance agencies, Greenbaum said. We appreciate that since they've been under court order. Missouri's Department of Social Services has been a national model in showing how to implement this law. It has voter registration has increased 2,000%. Democracy has increased 2,000%. Thanks to Acorn. Thank you, Acorn. No wonder Fox News, Bill O'Reilly, Glenn Beck, and all the other Republican liars out there want to put Acorn out of business. They're promoting democracy. And when people vote, guess what happens? Republicans lose elections. All right, well, a lot of folks know me because of the work I do in election integrity, election reform. If I have some time today, I do need to beat up on the New York Times, who out and out got it wrong, who just put out, well, I'll run this real quick. They were talking about a new election reform bill that is has been introduced by Congressman Rush Holt out of New Jersey, and they said in an editorial on Monday that endorsed his bill. They said, quote, Mr. Holt's bill would require paper ballots to be used for every vote cast in November 2010. That, my friends, is a complete and utter error. I was going to call it a lie, but I don't know if they knew better. If they didn't know better, they sure as hell should have. They're the paper of record. Get it right. His bill will not require paper ballots until 2014. So we're talking three more federal elections, including one presidential. Until then, we can use the same crappy electronic touchscreen machines that don't work, that are 100% unverifiable. And the New York Times should know better. Well, they do now, because I've told them. I told them at BradBlog. I sent them a letter. I told them they need to correct this. So far, here are we Thursday, right? They have yet to correct their editorial from Monday. All they got to do is read his bill. I did it. It don't require paper ballots by November 2010. Stop misleading, New York Times. Thank you. Brad Friedman here on The Molloy Show. We'll be right back with Colleen Raleigh, your calls, and a whole hell of a lot more on The Mike Molloy Show. Welcome back to the Mike Molloy Show. Brad Friedman in for Mike. We are, of course, monitoring the situation with Michael Jackson, dead tonight at the age of 50 from a cardiac event of some type out here in Los Angeles from where I'm broadcasting. And if there is any additional news, I promise you we are monitoring that and we will bring it to you as it breaks. Moving on now to my first guest, Colleen Raleigh. Formerly an FBI special agent and legal counsel for more than 20 years until retiring in 2004. Following 9/11, after blowing the whistle on failures at the FBI, which led up to the attacks of 9/11, she testified to the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee about endemic problems facing both the agency and the intelligence community. In 2002, she was one of three whistleblowers named Time Magazine's Person of the Year. I couldn't be more delighted to have her here. And she's also, by the way, now a contributor to BradBlog.com. She has a terrific article today up about 60 Minutes and how they missed, as she describes it, how 60 Minutes missed the chance to yell at the naked emperor. Once again, Colleen Raleigh, when she was trying to raise the alarm, just as she tried to prior to 9/11, when she tried to raise the alarm about the war in Iraq, folks didn't listen to her. Well, will we ever learn? Welcome to the show, Colleen. How are you? Uh-oh, did I lose Colleen? Oh, great. Now all of a sudden I lost Colleen. You know why? Because I mentioned Michael Jackson, and she thought, oh, man, Michael Jackson, he died? I got to go look it up. All right, we got to get Colleen back on. I'll give you the background here on what she had to say today. Was that she had concerns about the war in Iraq. She had, of course, certain information because she worked at the FBI, and she tried to get that to the FBI director Robert Mueller, who at the time had told her, following her 9/11 disclosures, that next time something comes up, please let me know about it, Colleen. She did let him know about it, but she didn't hear back right away. And I think we have Colleen back now, and we'll pick up the story there. Colleen, do we have you back?
Yes, you do.
Okay, good. How are you?
Not too bad.
Good.
I don't know what you said about me just now, though, however.
Well, as soon as we lost you there, I don't know if you hung up on us or we hung up on you, but as soon as you weren't here anymore, I was bad-mouthing you like crazy, Colleen. You don't want to know. Don't check the archives later, okay?
That's okay. It's one of these, it goes with the nature of the job, I guess.
That's right. Well, actually, what I was doing was, first sort of catching folks up on who you are as the 9/11 FBI's 9/11 whistleblower, and on trying to sound the alarm again, as you did prior to the Iraq War, which you wrote about today at bradblog.com, and your experience with 60 Minutes. And we're not going to have time to get into that until after the break, so I'll just ask you very quickly. Following your testimony to the Senate about the problems with the FBI, were changes put in place, were reforms put in place that you are confident would keep something like 9/11 from happening again if there was a whistleblower out there like you setting off the alarm?
No, nothing really changed for the better. First of all, the 400-page report fully identifying the mistakes did not come out till the summer of 2004. Actually, well, it's 2003, the first IG investigation, but the 9/11 Commission report did not come out till the 2004.
Right.
So you had this long, lengthy investigation, of course, not even totally complete, and when they identified things, it was already way too late because the Bush administration had gone forward with its agenda, you know, including torture and all the rest.
Mm-hmm.
That had nothing, and they're launching the war in Iraq, that literally had nothing to do with the mistakes that had allowed allowed it to happen in the first place. It was a time sequence problem in the first place because people could not admit these mistakes quickly. It took 3 years, and even then it was just a partial.
But I know, and that's what I wonder. After that came out, were they able to make the changes? We'll get the answer to that after this break. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy, speaking with 9/11 whistleblower Colleen Raleigh. Taking your calls, 877-520-1150. Much more with Colleen Raleigh straight ahead. Stay with us.
Just don't know how to go about getting feeling sweet feeling.
If I could turn the page in time, then I'd rearrange just a page.
Yeah, they were telling a lot of lies, this Bush administration was, in order to get us into the war in Iraq. Colleen Raleigh, my guest, the FBI's 9/11 whistleblower, was trying to get the word out about those lies. And I think it's pretty clear now that they were lies, if there weren't any questions about it back then. Colleen Raleigh joins me. We'll take your calls in a little bit at 877-520-1150. Joins me, I should say. I'm Brad Friedman in for Malloy. We are monitoring the Michael Jackson situation, dead at age 50. And there were so many cars around the UCLA Medical Center, they've actually airlifted him out, his body out to the coroner, as I understand. If I understand that story correctly, of course, the TV stations are now following the helicopter. Newsflash, that ain't news. All right, what is news is Colleen Raleigh. And Colleen, thanks. Do we still have... There we go. There we go. All right, now I got you back, Colleen. So we were talking before the break about the reforms at the FBI. It took 3 years for the 9/11 report to come out, not until 2004, the recommendations they made to the FBI. And at that point, when they made those recommendations for FBI reform, were they taken seriously, and did they make those reforms that were recommended?
Well, I think there's 41 recommendations of the 9/11 Commission, and up until the 2006 election, a lot of them, almost none of them, were followed. And then after the 2006 election, they did pass some legislation, but there's still a number of them that weren't followed. One is that they were going to have a civil liberties board, And Bush disbanded the board after the only Democrat that was appointed on there, I forget his name now, Lanny Davis was the guy. And after a year of finding out that their civil liberties, privacy and civil liberties board had no power to do anything, he actually resigned from it. And then Bush, shortly thereafter, kind of secretly disbanded the whole thing. There were three of the 41 recommendations were about making a privacy and civil liberties board. So that was kind of a big part of it. And it's never even happened as far as I know. I don't know now if Obama has reconstituted. It's not been in the news at all. So.
Surely there must have been something done. You were named Times Person of the Year in 2002. You got a lot of publicity. Surely there were changes that were put in place at the FBI directly that would have meant when someone like you was sending, and correct me if I understand this correctly, you're sending memos saying, hey, you have concerns about the Zacharias Moussaoui, but nobody was getting those messages or acting on them?
Actually, the so-called reforms that the Bush administration did have, again, they do not connect to the mistakes. One of the things the Bush administration did was they went around the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which prescribes a way to get a warrant for terrorists. And if we could have gotten that warrant back in August of 2001, it might have revealed things, whatever. The reason that that warrant was denied had nothing to do with the law per se. And so, again, it's almost like the going to war in Iraq as a pretext. When you know the true facts and then you find out what they did as a response to 9/11, you see that it was just pretextual. It had nothing to do with the mistakes. So going around the law in order to have illegal warrantless monitoring had nothing to do with the denial of investigating Moussaoui. And yet, you know what? I saw this several times, even in the Washington Post, as given as the reason. Well, we would never want to have a Moussaoui case again where agents were not allowed to listen in and investigate. Well, that was not the reason this was done. It had nothing to do with the FISA law.
Did you tell that to the Washington Post when that story came out?
I did write a letter to the editor in, and I'm trying to think if it was published or not. I think I've in my whole post 9/11, I think I've had one letter to the editor published in the Washington Post, and I might have gotten 100 words? I might have gotten 100 words in the Washington Post refuting that. But it hasn't been refuted. My letter did not work effectively in the country to refute it. And you still think most people still have this idea that the reason Bush needed to grab this power, this unitary executive, was to then to address the pre 9/11 problems, and that could not be further from the truth.
Okay, well then let me put this to you another way before we talk about what you tried to do in the lead up to the war and the smoke signals you were trying to send on that. This basic question that we hear all the time: are we in fact safer now, since the whatever reforms were put in place following 9/11, in your opinion?
Well, no. And the reason is it goes back to this squaring the error in creating more enemy. If you're playing a game and only one ball has to go through to hit a goal, and that's the way it is with a terrorist attack. I mean, if your goal is never to allow another terrorist attack, and that's kind of unrealistic. They shouldn't be even talking about preventing all terrorist acts. It gives people false illusions about the reality of what's possible. But if that's the thing, and you have to prevent that goal from being scored, you certainly cannot afford to double and triple and quadruple and keep the other team.
The number of, right.
Of people that are kicking the ball in. And,
right.
And so if you look at it that way, we've created more enemy. I don't like to use these terms enemy, but we've radicalized so many more people in the world against Americans. And so there's no way you can win that way. There's absolutely no way that you can. I mean, that's where it's all, most of what we've done, Guantanamo and the war on terror and launching an unjustified war in Iraq, has all backfired and proven counterproductive.
We're speaking with former FBI Special Agent Colleen Rowley, who tried to raise the red flags about 9/11 before 9/11, when nobody was paying attention. Sounds like they're still not paying attention now. We're going to take your calls, 877-520. 1150-877-520-1150. Also monitoring the chat room over at bradblog.com. If you're going over to bradblog.com, the very top item, hit comments. Jump on in, join the conversation. I'll keep my eye on you there. And you truth seekers over at DU, yes, I'm always watching you people. And so I'm going to get to a call real quick here, but you brought up the idea of torture, and we've heard a lot lately about torture that was used when these interrogation techniques that were being used by the FBI that were working. These guys, CIA guys, came in and took it away from the FBI, and that's when apparently they were doing these waterboarding, these so-called enhanced interrogation techniques. Were the FBI investigations that you saw as an FBI agent, you were there until 2004, were they in fact effective, or did we need these more draconian techniques that were then used?
When the experienced and good experienced agents were allowed to do their job, as they would have, you know, certainly our agents in Minneapolis who wanted to do the job in August of 2001, mm-hmm. Ali Soufan, who was this great Lebanese-American Arabic-speaking mm-hmm. agent who had worked on the Cole bombing, very experienced on terrorism, worked under John O'Neill, if he had been allowed to do the debriefing interview of Zubaydah, it was working so far. I think that those things, that's what, and again, these have nothing to do with the Bush innovations. These were just agents who were trained already and doing a good job. And in many cases, they were interfered with and not allowed to work as they normally would. Certainly Ali Soufan, he was pulled off of the Zubaydah.
Yeah, and Ali Soufan had testified just a couple of weeks ago in Congress that they were getting information from Abu Zubaydah.
Yep. He had gotten a lot of confirmation about Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's role, et cetera, from Zubaydah. And, of course, part of the problem was they didn't even understand who Zubaydah was. This is where the ticking time bomb hypothetical always breaks down when you have the wrong person. Or if you have a totally innocent person, of course, and you're trying to torture things out of the wrong person, it doesn't work at all.
And you're imagining a ticking time bomb, and then you have to, how did you put it? You have to bring in the, quote, Bush innovations.
Yeah,
nice,
well, that's
nice way to put it.
Did I give a good Bush innovation?
Yeah.
I guess I'm trying to be nice tonight or something, but, you know, the FBI, if you go back to my analogy about the soccer game, is the goalie here, and they're trying to prevent these acts at the very last minute when they domestically.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, to some extent, the Bush thing about collecting more information
mm-hmm.
has hurt the cause, because they became this massive intelligence collector. Over half of the FBI was diverted from economic crimes, frauds, corruption matters to working in the so-called war on terror, and they became fancy intelligence analysts, and that's even a glorified term, because it's just tips coming in, serving letters for credit records, banking records, and they're all inputted into massive computers. And so this is what's counterproductive about it. It's like if you're trying to find a needle in a haystack terrorist, and now you've cluttered up your database or added hay to the haystack, it makes it even more difficult. Our agents were very in tune with the information that came from the flight school in August. And why were they so quick on that? In 5 or 6 days, that information had gone all the way up to George Tenet. He was briefed on August 23rd in Fundamentalist Learns to Fly PowerPoint.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why did that hit so quickly? Because it didn't land in this massive database of a million names on a terrorist watch list.
And that's what we're doing now. Hang on, Colleen. I got to get to a break here, and then we are going to come back and take your calls. Colleen Raleigh is my guest, former FBI special agent, 9/11 whistleblower, Time Magazine's 2002 Person of the Year, and, of course, her greatest honor, she is now a guest blogger at bradblog.com. Thank you, Colleen. Your calls coming on right after this. Brad here on The Molloy Show.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Malloy. You can stop by BradBlog and join the conversation over there. Speaking with Colleen Raleigh, FBI special agent, now retired, FBI 9/11 whistleblower, and, of course, Time Person of the Year in 2002. Colleen blogged today at BradBlog about her experience trying to get the word out about her concerns about the Iraq War. Those were also ignored, like her warnings about 9/11. And, in fact, she went to 60 Minutes. They interviewed her and never ended up running any of that footage at all. Is that correct, Colleen?
That's right. I wonder if they still have the tapes, because at some future point, historians might be interested in seeing. I'm sure there were other media that had Richard Clark types on mm-hmm. that never aired either. It's a pretty amazing thing to see how the PR system and the propaganda system, pre-agenda of the Bush administration, was working at that time, just to really push forward, and the media just went along with it.
And the media was going along with it, and we're going along with it. We're going to talk with Mark Harlan, a BuzzFlash, about that after in the next hour. But read that whole story at BradBlog, because it's really interesting. But maybe when I'm done with this Malloy gig this week, I'll try to contact 60 Minutes and see if we can shake out some of that footage. I think it'd be very interesting to look back on now.
Yeah, I want to thank you for the opportunity just to get a chance to write this down. You know, a lot of people always say, have you written a book yet? They always ask these questions, and it's really indulgent in a way, because the situation is still mm-hmm. going on. We haven't gotten to a happy ending where you feel like you could sit down and, I'll write my memoirs now about this.
Mm-hmm.
So it was good to put it down, because I've really blocked it out of my head to a great extent. It was so painful at that time with that war fever going on, and then nobody at all listening, and 60 Minutes, you know. I don't think they aired anything about the Iraq War until Richard Clark after that.
I think you got a great start at a first chapter in that article today on BradBlog. Really do. Let me go to John in Los Angeles. John, welcome to the Malloy Show. Do you have a question for Colleen Raleigh?
I do. I just want to say thank you, Ms. Raleigh, for your courage and service to America. I wanted to ask you if during the period prior to 9/11, has it ever occurred to you that perhaps it wasn't incompetence, that perhaps, as I feel and as many feel after we read the Project for a New American Century, that there is perhaps a desire to have a Pearl Harbor type of event so that broad actions could be enacted in this country, a unitary presidency, and certain actions could take place. Is it possible, has it ever occurred to you that the there was deliberate squashing of your attempts to get search warrants?
Thanks, John, for that call. Colleen?
Well, there's no doubt that this pre-agenda was in existence, the Project for the New American Century, and perhaps officials hoping for a Pearl Harbor. I mean, that's a very sick thing to say, that they were hoping for some kind of attack that they could then use as a pretext. And there's no doubt at all about that. That's been very much verified. I don't personally know of anything done deliberately before 9/11, but I do know that that the murkiest areas is that there might have been some other tidbits of intelligence, perhaps from foreign intelligence agencies like Mossad or mm-hmm. Pakistani sources. And the 9/11 Commission has not done a full job. They even admit that they were not able. They were stonewalled by the Bush administration at every level. So I think that's still a murky area about what other pre-9/11 intelligence was known. And the other area is the NORAD call-out, and that's completely murky.
Yeah, what happened there? Why they didn't scramble the planes?
The timeline.
The timeline.
Don't mesh
yeah.
with what people said.
Well,
they just don't mesh.
All right, Gus in Huntington Beach thinks the FBI didn't make a mistake. He thinks it was that it was intentional. Gus, is that right?
Well, you know, the thing that strikes me is patterns pop up through history, and, you know, Americans are really so astute about history. You know, they kind of like study history in school, and then they have it reinforced through movies and stuff. But getting back to patterns, there was an Egyptian army officer who was being used by the FBI during the first investigation of the first World Trade Center bombing. He was an informant working in the group that was building the bomb, And there's a tape conversation of him talking with his FBI handler about, you know, we're getting close. And the FBI was supposed to supply him with phony materials for the bomb, but as it turns out, they were real. And he's talking to his FBI handler, and his FBI handler is...
Real quick, Gus, because I got to get to a break.
Money. Oh, okay. Well, hey... Conspiracy theorists forever.
Okay. Thanks, Gus. Well, the question that I get all the time, and I'm sure you get as well, the suggestion that it was an inside job. Would you like to address that before we have to let you go tonight, Colleen?
You're looking at a situation on the surface. It's amazing what things can look like, and then when you actually find out the full truth of it, what it actually amounted to. That's one thing. And the second thing is that there's been so much deception about him. Most of the things I know are about embarrassing mistakes. And so when that happens and people don't tell the full truth about things, it does give rise to people's naturally would suspect there's a more nefarious reason for not telling the truth. We're in a terrible situation where people don't even know right from wrong in telling the truth now, and it does give rise to citizen suspicions.
You're right. I think these guys have only themselves to blame when they worry about, when they hear this inside job stuff. Well, sure, they hid enough stuff, they covered up enough stuff. It's hard to not think, well, what did they know, and did they let this happen on purpose somehow? Colleen Rowley, bless you for all you do. Really delighted you were able to be with us tonight, and for your good work over at Brad Blog and across the nation. Thanks for all you do, Colleen.
Well, thank you for having me.
You bet. All right, coming back with more Malloy Show, Mark Carlin for Buzz Flash, straight ahead.